This is the Medicast Live, recorded live on March 10th, 2009, but released to you here in the Medicast on March 16th, 2009.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers. Featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to the Medicast. This is the Medicast live episode recorded earlier this week where we discussed collegiate EMS. There are a lot of volunteer, collegiate-based EMS services out there that primarily serve the college campuses on which they serve, but also serving, in some cases, surrounding communities and working as any other mutual aid company would. And so it was important for us, I think, to look at this particular niche marketplace for the EMS providers and talk to some of the representatives of some of the EMS services that we find on college campuses around the country, as well as talking to a couple of the members of the board of the National Collegiate EMS Foundation. They recently had their annual meeting in Washington, D.C., and I was lucky enough to catch up with both the president and the vice president and have them on as our special guests, along with a couple of longtime listeners and supporters of the Medicast who happen to be members of their own collegiate EMS services or a past member in one case. So without too much further ado, we'll have a few other messages and then we'll move right on into the segments. Don't forget, you can get back in touch with me here. Send in email comments, suggestions, and corrections into podmedic@mac.com by email. You can also call in on the voicemail line, 941-306-3342. That's 941-30-MEDIC. And you can always check out the Medicast forums available over at forums.medicast.com. A great way to touch base with other listeners and share your ideas, thoughts, and comments there. I return every single email I get, but sometimes it takes me a couple of days. You can get often a much quicker answer over at the Medicast forums. It's free to register and sign up and participate there. And you can share your thoughts, comments, videos, pictures, and a lot of other things via the Medicast forums. So check it out. All right, without further ado, let's jump on in and we'll move into this week's earlier recorded segment on collegiate EMS. This is the Medicast Live, and we're being recorded here on March 10th, 2009, and we are going to be talking about collegiate EMS tonight. You can find out a little bit more about that when you follow up over at the Medicast website, medicast.com, where we will have further links to the National Collegiate EMS Foundation website, as well as additional links at two different EMS services and college services around the country. This is a side of EMS that I don't think many of us know about unless you happen to be working in and around a university and maybe you've had contact with first response units on campuses and have had to interact with them, and maybe you know a little bit more about them. But we'll be kind of looking at this unique organizational setup for responders working very closely with their peers in a close-knit community. I have some very special guests on tonight. I have the president of the National Collegiate EMS Foundation, and George, I have you on here. George, can you pronounce your last name for me?
It's Koenig.
Koenig. I wasn't sure, so I didn't want to mess it up, but this is Dr. George Koenig. He is currently an orthopedic physician. Is that correct?
Trauma critical care fellow. So I'm completing my training in trauma and critical care.
Trauma and critical care in Baltimore.
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay. And but before he was a physician, he was involved in the emergency medical services in his undergraduate career at Bucknell University and has, of course, continued in medicine and advanced to become a physician. And that's great. I also have on board our the VP from the National Collegiate EMS Foundation. And Dr. Scott Civette is also a physician and is I'd like to tell us a little bit about where you came through. You came through multiple collegiate EMS services. Is that correct?
I did, but I need to correct you. I'm not a physician.
Oh, okay.
I'm a PhD. I'm the other kind of doctor.
The other kind of doctor. Okay. Well, we'll go with that. That's okay. We also have on the show two longtime listeners of the MedicCast that have been talking with me over the last couple of years about collegiate EMS and really been on me in a good way to make sure that we talk about it and keep it fresh in people's minds. And we've brought it up on the show as a topic of conversation from time to time, but we've never really devoted a whole live program to that. So I'm really happy to have on the show, first of all, David Costin. David is a former member of the University of Vermont EMS service. David, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And also Woody Parker. Woody is at St. Lawrence University in upstate New York, and Woody is currently involved as an undergrad and working with the EMS service on his campus. Woody, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to just start things off here and I'll start with George. What are some of the scope, the size and scope of EMS services? When I picture a collegiate EMS service, George, I think of a first response service, but I'm sure there are also transport-based services out there as well.
Yeah, I think that the scope of collegiate EMS really covers the scope of EMS in general. You know, we know of about 250 organizations that provide some form of collegiate EMS within the United States, as well as about 15 organizations in Canada that provide EMS. As far as EMS on college campuses, that can vary from full ALS to ALS transport, can down to, you know, a kind of quick response, you know, first response type of group. I think, though, one of the things you alluded to, though, is that the bulk of campus EMS is provided at the BLS level. And I think pretty much our latest kind of statistics show about 30 to 35% have transporting agencies, and the rest are pretty much kind of first response in some sort of regard.
So you guys just had your a conference recently in D.C. Do you get a lot of attendees? Are they mostly current students, or do you have former members coming in as well?
Sure. So we this year we had approximately 850 attendees, which was another record for us. It seems that we have been adding to our conferences about 100 people per year for the past couple of years. The breakdown of alumni, I didn't get the actual data back yet, but I would probably venture to say that at least 10% of those attending were alumni in some capacity. On top of that, we had about 60-some speakers, of which, you know, roughly half of those were alumni as well. I think it's one of the things that we certainly, you know, we look at as a strength in collegiate EMS, that we have, you know, people that are dedicated that can provide insight, oversight, and sort of, you know, guidance to, campus-based organizations.
So I'm going to talk to Scott here real quick. Scott, you moved through several different collegiate environments, from a small liberal arts college all the way up to a major university. And you saw some of the growing pains of even getting new organizations started. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the differences in scope that are involved when you have a small university with maybe a relatively small response force compared to something like the University of Indiana?
Well, to be honest, it's going to follow the same challenges. Obviously, it changes in scope because instead of providing care for 1,200 students, it might be 12,000 students, or in the case of IU, 35,000 students. So from a logistics standpoint, once you get to a bigger campus, you have to start thinking about vehicles as opposed to something on a small liberal arts campus where you might be able to get away with a bicycle or a golf cart or something small like that. So that would be the major difference between a campus, small liberal arts and a large land-grant institution or a large public university.
I'm going to ask Woody a question now. Woody, you're currently involved with EMS and collegiate EMS. What are some of the issues that you run into frequently? I mean, I think when a lot of people think about colleges, they think about drunk students, overdose students, but I'm sure that's not the only thing you all run into. You're there for the students every time of the day and night. What kind of what are some of the issues you run into? Is it similar to what people in the outside world might see?
I think that college EMS is rather unique because we're seen as peers helping peers versus an institution coming in as an ambulance coming in to care for somebody in their home. So initially, there are some issues of, you know, is this person a really qualified individual to be caring for me? And I was lucky when I became director of SLU EMS, St. Lawrence University's Emergency Medical Services, I inherited a pretty fantastic system. The people before me had worked very hard to make sure that our image was something that was appropriate for what we were trying to do. And the administration backed us with a lot of institutions, a lot of universities have a difficult time getting that initial support. We've had some hiccups over the last 3 years with the local rescue squad and making sure that we are helping them the most efficient and effective way possible. And about 10 of our 25 members volunteer in some capacity because they have an insider view of what the rescue squad wants and needs and then can work really well once they get on campus. But for those other 15 folks on our team who are not involved with the rescue squad, we have to do some pretty significant training with the rescue squad to ensure that there's good patient transfer and quality communication going on so there's not a misunderstanding.
David, how are things at University of Vermont? Do you see that do you think that's changed quite a bit? I know you said that they've progressed to more of a paid service.
Yeah, I certainly think we sort of had a unique environment in that we also worked on campus and off campus as well. We would sort of a mutual aid agreement would provide EMS to the surrounding cities and then a variety of other communities. So we sort of had a couple different stakeholders. I think we had our fellow students, but then also the community and how they would kind of interact because we'd be going on 911 calls, you know, responding to people's homes and there. And it certainly has changed going from, you know, more of a paid service just like everybody else. And we had talked about trying to find students, trying to find that balance between work and school and getting everybody together at the same time is a big challenge, I think, for everybody to have that truck all the time.
I'm going to try to throw this out there for everybody. What are some of the biggest issues right now for collegiate EMS? I know that, David, you had brought up the comment from a few folks that you knew that worked around college campuses on the outside, that there was a bit of a perception, a negative perception associated with the responders inside the campus. Is that something that other students, EMS services are seeing, or is that just, just a problem when any jurisdiction works next to one another one?
I think it's a matter, by the way, this is Scott. I think it's a matter of keeping a professional attitude. And, you know, no matter if you're volunteer paid, collegiate or non-collegiate, if you handle yourselves professionally, you provide quality patient care, you shouldn't have a problem. If you look like a bunch of bozos, jumping out of a clown car, you know, people are just piling out of the ambulance when you get on scene, and you're not in proper uniforms and whatnot, there's going to be a perception. And I think with collegiate squads, sometimes with a very tight budget, sometimes uniforms are one of the last things that get accounted for, because if it's a choice of, you know, buying a suction unit or buying a uniform, you're going to buy the suction unit and let your uniform suffer. So I think professionalism is the key, not only how you look, but also how you act.
I think the other thing, this is George again, the other thing that we kind of encourage as an organization is that, you know, campus-based EMS groups, you know, strive to attain certification or basically licensure, which really puts them on par with, you know, with any kind of local agency, be it whether they are quick response licensed or or BLS licensed or ALS licensed. So I think that really has leveled kind of the field and decreased the perception that there's sort of inequalities or that there's a different kind of training background because, you know, they're meeting the exact same standards.
I'm going to bring Dan into the call here. He had a comment. Dan, go ahead.
Hi. I'm just a little background. I'm active on an EMS squad in Greater Boston, and I was at the conference 2 weeks ago, and I really loved it. But some of the issues that I think that my college or my university is dealing with and some of the stuff that I discussed and heard about at the conference was looking at training and looking at the level of experience that campus EMS providers have. You know, we looked at it realistically and we said, you know, the maximum experience that anyone is going to have is 4 years. And, you know, what is the quality of a patient care provider that is, you know, taking one shift a month for 4 years? And who are our leaders? Who are our crew chiefs on these EMS squads? How do they get outside experience when taking a full-time course load in, at a university? You know, can they go to Joe Schmo's private ambulance company down the street and call, you know, a part-time shift a week off-campus experience? You know, so looking at training that way, looking at, you know, getting our public perception on campus, you know, under control. You know, we've been accused of being the Band-Aid Brigade, and, you know, to many degrees we are. But, you know, as you just said, we are very proud that we are inspected and have an ambulance license from the state. You know, we're very proud of that. We are held to the same standards as Boston EMS, as, you know, some of the largest ambulance companies in the country. And that's a token up. But making sure that we continue to have motivated students and we can train those students properly is really a hurdle for us.
This is Woody, and I'll just make a comment on that. There's another issue that leadership is only there for 2 years. You know, when you come through the ranks and you're ready to be a crew chief or you're ready to be an assistant director or director, you have proved yourself to the team where they have nominated you or elected you to that position. But how much time do you have to really make a difference with the organization? You're not in the position of a fire chief or a rescue squad chief who may be there for 4 years and there's a strong membership base that will stay relatively constant throughout changes. So we've had some concerns brought to us when trying to implement new community training programs, putting in public access defibrillator programs. We might be motivated right now and for the next year, but after those 2 years or 3 years have passed, will the next group be as motivated? So, I mean, it's an issue to try to maintain the organization as a whole and keep that mission and vision going.
Do campus services involve other members of the college communities other than students, like such as professors, instructors, other members, staff of the college community to work in the program?
I'll comment quickly. My service does not have much involvement from the rest of the community. We have very heavy involvement from our medical director, who's a doctor at the health center on campus. We have weekly call reviews with her, and she's excellent. And a very strong relationship with public safety departments. Aside from that, very little interaction with the community. We have a daycare center on campus, but have not been able to kind of breach those gaps.
It's just George. I was going to tell you, that I think if I interpret your question correctly, that there are different models that exist. You know, they're primarily most groups are completely student run, completely with student kind of volunteers. But there's a mix between some that have professional or paid supervisors almost all the squads have a medical director. But other than that, some do have sort of a mixed kind of staff and student model as far as providing care, but it's not the norm.
I just wondered because I thought maybe that would provide a little more continuity if there was a core of responders that had been around for more than the 4 years you typically see.
One of the
committees that we're in the process of putting together, and we hope to have in place by the end of this academic year, is a vision committee, something that will include senior staff as well as more experienced folks on SLU-EMS and also our newer members, so that this committee as a group can get the university's input as well as the membership's input of where we want to see ourselves in 5 years or in 10 years and create some landmarks. So it provides a little bit of a goal to try to reach. And fingers crossed, the university was behind us and hopefully will continue to be behind us in the formation of this sort of a committee.
I think it sounds a lot like any other volunteer organization. I live in a very small rural community where there isn't a lot of opportunities for us to practice advanced skills of any kind on a regular basis. As a paramedic, you know, I have to rely on making sure I'm staying up on my training, on reviewing things quite frequently. And I think, you know, that is one of the concerns that was brought up. But I also think that you know, you could probably look at any of the growing pains and challenges faced by any volunteer organization, whether it's an EMS organization or any volunteer organization, having to continually prime that pump, to continually to get people into the system and train them and bring them up to a certain level of competency very quickly and involvement. So have you seen that correlation?
I think one of the things that you can correlate that to, though, is that I think pretty much an accepted standard in municipal EMS or volunteer EMS squads is there's approximately a 30% turnover rate. I think, is that what you're alluding to?
Yeah, I think so. I think we see a lot, you know, in my local service, I'm the training officer, was a former EMS chief here, and we're heavily involved in bringing new people in all the time. And, you know, about maybe 20% of them stick for any length of time. The rest of them kind of fall by the wayside. And that's a challenge I've seen in any volunteer organization that I've ever been involved with. It seems to run into that same problem where you have to, you know, continually train people and bring them up to speed in the organization. So I can understand how difficult that is, especially when you know you're going to lose people every 4 years, no matter what you do.
I think one way around that is by having a pretty rigorous training program. A lot of the squads will have a boot camp, either for current members, returning members, new members, and bring everybody together, not just from a training aspect, but also from a social aspect. Because, you know, as collegiate EMS providers, you see more than the typical college student sees on campus. You see a lot of the ugly underbelly of the campus life. And, you know, there's a camaraderie that if it's there, it definitely helps. It takes the edge off the hard times, and to know that you have a bunch of friends that you can rely on, not only after the call, but during the call. You know, when you ask for something, you know that somebody's going to be right there with you.
I'd like to ask another question, because this is something we run into. Colleges are such close-knit communities, unless it's a really big university. Is there an issue because you're treating your peers or treating your friends on a more regular basis? I see that here in a small community. It seems like no matter what call we go out on, somebody knows somebody that's in the household. Do you run into that as well, and does it present problems or issues specific to collegiate EMS? George, I'll let you take this one.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess anytime you treat a coworker, anytime you treat a friend, there's always, you know, some sort of awkwardness, I guess. And I think, though, your training has you fall back in the set of kind of a professional kind of relationship. I mean, and you think about it, the vast majority of people, at least the way I experienced, when you're called, you know, they're calling because they need help. And sort of, I think that a lot of times all those associations sort of disappear for the physical, you know, constraint of the call per se. I know that, you know, it's always kind of, it always seems a little weird to me that, you know, Monday morning you'd go to class and you'd sit in class and be like, wow, I took that person to the hospital this weekend. And you're thinking in the back of your head, you know, do they even remember that? And it's kind of like one of those things that you kind of always have this whole dilemma that, well, it's great, it happened, it's in the past, and it's nothing that you can even talk about. I think that as a whole, we're very good about that. And I think that it's just sort of the nature of providing care in a small community.
I'll chime in quickly, if you don't mind. I'm on call right now, and just probably 3 hours ago, I had a call for a good friend of mine who had no major illness but needed to go to the hospital for rehydration. And we ended up transporting her in a police car, and I traveled with her, and the entire time she was worried because she was planning on going out on a date with her boyfriend, who I also know very well. How would she get in touch with him? Her cell phone didn't work, whatever. And it's a big struggle because as soon as I came off the call, I saw him. But, you know, she had not explicitly asked me to get in touch with him, so I said nothing. You know, it's you know, partly Murphy's Law. As soon as you have a patient care interaction with someone, you see them 6 times a day for the next week. And, you know, maybe you just notice them more, but, you know, you're put in these situations where you see these people. But, you know, confidentiality and privacy is very important, and it gets very carefully protected.
I figured as much, but I just know that working in the community in which I work, it is a constant issue. You run into people that you've transported in the grocery store, and you run into them in the video store, and you run into them around town wherever you are. And I try to smile at them and just nod, and I don't acknowledge how or where I know them from unless they speak to me first. But I know in a college situation, I can remember I went to a small liberal arts school with about 1,500 students. And, you know, by the time I was a senior, I knew everybody at least on site, if not, you know, a good number of them by the first name basis. It would be difficult for me as I look back. I wasn't involved in EMS at that time, but it would be difficult, I think, to work in that kind of an environment.
I think that's one of the things, though, we also train for, though. You know, I think part of our training on campus, you know, for campus EMS isn't exactly just providing skills. You know, it's kind of providing kind of global skills, like leadership skills, so that you can, you know, deal with kind of a turnover leadership, that you're providing, you know, communication skills on how to interact with, you know, different departments within your university, so that you can go talk to the Dean of Student Life and say, hey, we need this, or that you can talk to sort of, you know, the Director of Public Safety. And so I think we kind of incorporate that into our training, which sort of lends us sort of being better prepared for encountering those situations.
We talked a little bit about funding as being an issue for collegiate EMS services, and I'm curious to see, do colleges fund these organizations, seeing them as a benefit to provide first response services on campus? I know that if they're not transporting patients, they can't charge or generally don't charge for those services as first responders on the scene. But how do they deal with getting that funding? Or do they go out for donations? Do they hold drives for funding? I'd be curious about that. Scott, do you have anything to add about that?
Sure. I think it's as it's as varied as the groups themselves. There's a few models that George alluded to earlier, whether the group falls under public safety or campus health or student activities or campus life. In the best case scenario, they would be treated like an administrative department. You know, maybe they get a line item from the public safety department or a line item funding from the student health service. That would be best case scenario. Worst case scenario would be that they get in line with the fencing club, the chess club, the all the other student activities organizations, and have to ask for money every semester. Some schools have gone, taken the extra step where they, there's a line item out of a student activities fee, you know, maybe a dollar or two per semester per student that goes towards the campus emergency squad. And that would also be a good thing to have, but unfortunately, not all the schools have that luxury, and we see time and time again some schools, you know, not able to attend our conference, even though our conference fees are very low. We keep that in mind when we set our fees, or you know, not able to. I alluded to this earlier, not able to afford uniforms or a new piece of equipment that they really want or need.
This is Woody with St. Lawrence.
Go ahead.
We are a part of our campus safety department, and it has evolved over the last several years into being a pretty significant part of the department. They employ about 40 students, 25 of whom are with SLU EMS, and so our budget comes directly from them. But just as everyone's budget is a bit tough from time to time, and now especially the items that we need or that we'd like, the larger items, go through capital requests. And so it's always a hit or miss. And as happened over the last few years, we'll get one or two items accepted through a capital request, and the rest will be tabled for the next year, or they'll say, you know, be sure to resubmit this next year. But it's a very delicate operation for us because the budget is set just so we can get along, just so we can get through the academic year in terms of supplies. But the university is very aware that campus safety is something that, despite having a budget, is absolutely necessary to the students and to the operation of the university.
Jamie, this is David, if I can.
Go ahead, Dave.
It was quite often when I was there that, you know, once a year we had to present ourselves before the SGA and kind of lobby for what we were looking for, again, sort of along the lines with the fencing club and everybody else, which made it difficult because not everyone sort of understood what you did and why you were there. And I know now the squad has progressed to billing, so I think that certainly helps, you know, organizations certainly capture some income to get supplies and whatnot. But there's definitely those years where we were out there, just like everybody else, trying to get funding to do our thing as well.
I know that's an issue for everybody, and it just was something that came up a couple of times in our conversations, both during, you know, tonight's call earlier and also in emails that we've had over the last couple of weeks, and I just wanted to bring it up. It also, is there any – how much working or interaction is there Woody, I guess I'll ask this from you, between your organization and organizations from outside the campus, your local responders in the community around campus. Do you train together? Do you do any joint operations training at all?
We are invited to train with any of the county EMS organizations. That if the county organization is doing a training, we're invited to those. We're also invited to all of the closed rescue squad training. Although not many of our members who are not involved with the rescue squad take advantage of that. But we have been involving them more and more, inviting them to campus when we've held closed trainings, making sure that there's a reciprocal invitation. In April, we're training with the rescue squad, with two local rescue squads, in putting together an MCI drill, which originally when we had talked to them, we were going to need some resources that they had. And we had not actually expected them to be interested in participating with us. And the president of the rescue squad said, well, actually, we'd really like to do this with you. So it's been nice to have some interaction outside of the emergency. Earlier this year, we invited the president of the rescue squad, as well as bigwigs from local organizations that SLU EMS works with, into a meeting so that they could explain how we've worked in the past 10 years and how we hope to work in the future. But it was also important to see these people not at 3 o'clock in the morning and, you know, actually say hello and have a conversation with them versus just quick turnover of patients.
Has there been any initiative on the national level from the from you guys at the national level, George and Scott, on trying to encourage more participation between your organization, your membership, and surrounding communities, especially in the current focus we have on response communications and in light of things like the Virginia Tech shootings and things like that. Certainly college campuses, I think Rick Rosati of the Mitigation Journal podcast would be all over me here if I didn't point out that college campuses are really soft targets for any kind of mass casualty incident of an intentional nature. Has there been any renewed focus on those kind of issues?
Yeah, I think that to answer your question, to answer it in a couple different sections. One, one of our new initiatives for this year is we developed a kind of a disaster preparedness committee to sort of generate some resources as to, how campus EMS organizations can learn about their disaster plan on campus, how they can integrate themselves with the disaster plan, or even, they may find out that the disaster plan is 20 years old and they may be able to help, rewrite it. So we have looked at that as kind of a priority for this year. As far as integration with local kind of municipal resources, We certainly encourage that. I think one of the things that we did this year at our conference, we held a kind of a mini workshop on sort of transfer of patient care, how you kind of interface with outside agencies or how you interface with kind of the local hospital. And so I think that, we continue to emphasize the importance of not kind of living in the bubble and realizing that, number one, you if you're serving as a first response service, that you have to have a great rapport. But two, if you're serving as a transport service, that they are your backup. And so you can't really ignore them, so it's important to train with them. It's important to continually reach out, even if the first couple times aren't successful.
Does anyone else have anything to add to that? Because that's a topic that I've really am interested in, just simply because I think that it seems like it's a point where, just based on some of the research I've done, it seems like that's where things break down. It seems like there's not a lot of communication across the lines between on-campus and off-campus. At least maybe that's because the things I found when I was searching were all articles focusing on, the negative things, as news so often does. But I'm wondering is that the perception that the services are working well together?
This is Woody with St. Lawrence. We recently had the opportunity to talk with the Alumni Council as part of their disaster preparedness talking series, really, just to inform the Alumni Council what we were doing. And when the conversation came to me to talk about what we're doing on campus with emergency medical services, the director of our risk management, the guy that gets to plan the what-ifs, was impressed, and he didn't know that we had all of these resources and we hadn't been fully involved with the plan. Security had, the safety department had, but we had not explicitly been involved. So since that conversation, he's been in touch trying to figure out how we can be more a part of this disaster plan. But on a county scale, SLU EMS is not a part of the community MCI plan. So in the event of an MCI happening in Canton, New York, where St. Lawrence is located, or in any of the villages surrounding it, we would not be directly involved. It would have to be a phone call made to the university to involve SLU EMS, which I think the local resources are more than willing to do, and we can create a memo of understanding with Central Dispatch on that sort of, if that were ever to happen, but we're not directly involved in their plan.
I would think colleges and universities possess, the buildings and resources to become a sheltering location. I'm surprised that local planners aren't more involved with those facilities and having access to them. But like you said, they are. They just weren't aware that there was a student EMS organization on campus that could participate in any kind of plan that they had in place. As we get down towards the bottom of the hour here, I want to ask a question that has to do with just any kind of perceived issues on the horizon? Or what are some of the initiatives, I guess, George or Scott, that you all are really focusing on for the coming next couple of years as you see your organization continue to grow? You were talking about increased membership attendance at your conferences. What other initiatives are you doing to promote collegiate EMS?
This is Scott. One of the things that we've always focused on, and it's continuing to grow, is the resources, the actual documentation type resources that we offer to our constituent organizations. It's always better not to have to reinvent the wheel. So if your school is looking to roll out something like public access DFID program, there's no need to start from a blank piece of paper. You can just look online, find one from a school that's similar to yours, and modify it appropriately and submit it. So by doing that, and PAD is just one example, SOPs or SOGs for new organizations, bylaws, and sort of organizational type issues. We have always made those available, and we are striving to make them even more available. For example, we have in mind right now for an SOP library, we actually linked other schools' websites. We're going to try to bring that in-house. So instead of just saying, here's where you can find Penn State's SOPs, we're going to grab a copy of Penn State's, store them on our server. That way, if Penn State's SOPs happen to not be online anymore, at least we have them and can make them available.
I think that's important all the way around. I think everybody needs to make sure that they're sharing their abilities, their capabilities, and their lessons learned with everyone. It's one of the things. It's one of the reasons we really promote cross training and planning here in our area between the different fire companies, because there are opportunities for all of us to learn from each other's lessons, and it's good to hear that you all are sharing your knowledge with each other. It's not surprising, I guess, coming from a collegiate background, but you'd be surprised how often people are so wanting to hold on to their knowledge and not share their secrets, even in what you would consider an open organizations like emergency medical services. Now you have your conference. Is that something every year that's held on the East Coast, or is it move around the country?
Our conference, so it's every year the last weekend in February. It works for the college schedule. It for the past several years it's been rotating between Philadelphia, D.C., Baltimore, and Boston, and I think it's partly because that the vast majority of at least the student groups that participate actively with us are from kind of the Northeast. I think, though, if you look at the representative as a whole, within the entire country, there's such a concentration density of colleges and universities in the Northeast as compared to everywhere else as well, which is kind of also why I think it lends well to having it there. But we always are looking for places to go.
I've got a new caller online. I'm going to go ahead and open the lines up to EMT Lion, and I'll just ask you to give me your first name when I unmute you here, and see if you have any comments you'd like to throw in since you called in. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Regina. I'm currently with George Washington University, NC MSF alumnus, and with Penn State University, and this is my first time on the call, so I wasn't quite sure when my ability to speak was enabled. But I just wanted to chime in on the kind of mutual aid, especially with all the attention on school shootings recently on college campuses as being seen as open targets. And just to say that in Pennsylvania recently, there's been some legislation that has been passed encouraging all the townships to actually do updated hazard analysis and also resource assessments to include medical, public response, fire, specialty resources. So I think from that perspective, you're going to see a lot more participation from local government levels in just communicating with the collegiate EMS organization. So from a motivation perspective, if the students band together and present a, educated, unified front of what the resources are, what the threats are on campus, because that's also another, specialty, piece of this is a lot of the college campuses have chemical labs and different hazards that aren't, present in the typical community across America, which you're, public leadership might not be prepared to write an emergency plan for. So I think if the campus EMS organization bands together and, helps doing the site assessment, also with the planning of resources, I think it's probably just an educational issue in that they don't know, truly what training these, providers go through and what they've had. With the implementation of NIMS and ICS training across the country.
Regina, thanks for that comment. And I think it's good to hear that Pennsylvania is trying to get people to work together and plan a little bit better. I know I'm right next to Pennsylvania, and we work quite a bit with the agencies just across the border and do a lot of mutual aid responses. It is something that I think is important, and you brought up something about hazardous materials, and I really hadn't thought about it in that regard. But I always think of college campuses as densely packed, population centers, just like any other apartment building or something like that. But there is the danger of having all of those hazardous materials and other things close by. Those of you that are on the call that are currently involved in collegiate EMS, do you have some contingent of or some aspect of hazardous materials training involved with your services?
This is Woody at St. Lawrence. We do a hazmat awareness course that's available online for us, which I think most people take away as when there's a hazmat incident, get uphill and upwind, but. We rely on the local fire department and the county hazmat team if we were to ever have an incident. But that being said, the fire department is invited on campus two or three times a year to go through buildings to get to know what sort of small spaces they might have to enter. And we've just opened a new science facility on campus this fall, so they had an opportunity to come through that and see exactly what labs held what and where hazmat information is located.
What about, I'm trying to think who else is on the call. Dan, you're out there. You do anything with some of the hazardous materials involved on your campus, some of the things that you might run into? Is there any kind of walkthrough or prep to know what's in what building?
Yeah, we certainly do. We also invite the fire department on campus fairly often. Although, in fact, the last time they did that, they walked through all of the science buildings. We also have a brand new science center, which is opening very soon. But they were then walking through some of the residence halls, and we ended up with $25,000 worth of deficiency tickets. But that's a different story. We know and love them. But, we also do talk through some of the materials that are kept on campus. All of our primaries, our crew chiefs and our supervisors have some sort of hazmat training. Our supervisors certainly do. And we talk a lot about, what happens if the first person on scene, finds, 30 people down. What are our protocols for whether we send anybody else in? What are our protocols for looking up, methyl ethyl bad stuff? And at what point do we call the fire department? What point do we call a regional agency? So we certainly talk about that a lot. We have not drilled on it recently. That's probably something that should change. But, yeah.
There's always some things we should probably drill more frequently, but finding the time to do that amidst everything else is always a challenge. I'm going to close down here and kind of wrap things up, and I'm going to go around the table of the special guests we have on tonight and just kind of ask if anyone would like to add a comment. Before I do that, I just want to thank Regina and Dan for helping out on the call tonight. I'll start with you, George. Is there anything you'd like to just say about Collegiate EMS to the listeners in the Medicast? Perhaps they have a college in their community or are involved perhaps as a student EMS provider now about becoming a member of your organization or working more closely?
Sure. I think that, you know, one of the things that as a foundation that we kind of – you know, realize and really promote is that your involvement with Campus EMS is really more than just providing the actual care. And it's really about developing skills that you'll need for life, whether, you know, you continue in EMS, continue in medicine, continue in some sort of health profession, or go on into either the business world. You know, the skills of leadership, problem solving, you know, working together as a team, and decision making are all things that you can utilize later. And so I think that everyone goes to college to learn all of those things, and that kind of, you know, participating in campus-based EMS really, you know, encompasses everything you should really get out of college. I think that, you know, we certainly, our website, you know, I'd be happy to direct people to, it's www.ncemsf.org. There's a lot of resources on there. You know, we're continually improving it. I'm certainly happy to get any feedback from anyone. They could email me at president@ncemsf.org. And I think that there's a great future for campus-based EMS, and that, you know, there's a great future for EMS as a whole.
Scott, any final comments?
A couple of things come to mind. We touched upon this, but I think it's important, and it dovetails into what George was saying. Campuses are communities, and I think a lot of communities strive to be self-sufficient. You know, you eat on campus, you sleep on campus, you live on campus. Well, just as you have a public safety or police department on campus, having a campus emergency medical services organization that's dedicated to, you know, serving the people on that campus is really helpful. And you as a member of that organization, you understand what your patients are going through. You know, they're cramming for finals. They are, you know, stressed because they're a freshman, first time out of, you know, out of the house, and they're dealing with their diabetes or a seizure disorder or something like that. You know, some sort of long-term illness that they have. So you can understand what they're going through. Not that a non-collegiate provider couldn't understand that, but I think that students caring for other students, it just lends a whole nother level of caring.
I think that's a great point, and communities that care for themselves are better able to take some of the load off of the surrounding community. I know John EMT in the chat room just made that comment. He belongs to an organization that is working outside of a college area, and he likes the fact that the college first responders in his community take some of that load off, that they're able to treat patients that might otherwise have called 911 for an ambulance, and maybe they didn't need transport, but would have tied up those services otherwise. And I think that's a valuable part of any community, including the larger surrounding community.
Woody, I'll go ahead and let you have your turn. Do you have any final thoughts about your time as an EMS provider in a campus, and some of your thoughts?
I think college EMS is a sort of a giant beast. It's different than any other sort of EMS that's out there. And whenever I've had the opportunity to go to the National Collegiate EMS Foundation's conference twice, and you see different colleges of different sizes, different resources in different stages, whether they're very established and highly paid or they're just getting going. But I think that we've recognized that everybody who works in college EMS affects that team and leaves their mark, and most are for the better. And it's pretty exciting to see to talk with alumni and see how things have changed and improved, and it'll be neat to see what happens in the next 5 years.
And I see Regina has a comment. I'll bring her back on the line here.
My last comment, and I think it's great that forums like this are able to exist now, but I think Campus EMS is unique in that there's a real ability, depending on the particular needs and the face of that campus, for specific programs to be developed. If you look at, you know, cardiac arrest survival rates on college campuses or in densely populated areas where traditionally, you know, your traditional response times from local EMS are lengthened, you know, you're going to see increased survival rates from your local responders, knowing those facilities, knowing those buildings. And I think that's true for just generally response times in general, not just for particular programs, but Campus EMS is unique in that you have athletic events, there's opportunities for special events EMS, there's opportunities for public access AED programs, MCI training, different opportunities that you don't always see within a general EMS community. And I think that's what makes it unique for the EMS provider in general, is they can experience some of the specialties of EMS and not just, the typical run-of-the-mill.
Thank you very much. I think that's very interesting to hear. One of the things that I see as I look back at my undergraduate time in college, I was involved as a resident assistant in the dorms and helped out with first aid. I had to go through first aid training. Maybe that was the beginning of my response service there, since I was on call and responding to emergencies on campus as they came up when I was on duty. But it's something that I think that you're right. It's an interesting community. It's a group of people all about the same age, all closely packed together, and I don't think you see that in any other communities. So thanks for that comment, Regina. I'm going to wrap up here with David. David kind of got this ball rolling, and closely followed by Woody. And David, I'm so glad you brought up this topic, because it's great to have this discussion and have this forum. And we may have to do this again in the future here on the MedicCast Live, as other events occur and other opportunities to talk about this issue. But David, why don't you share your final thoughts with us?
Yeah, it was a great show tonight, definitely. Sort of piggyback off of what George said, I think it's a great opportunity for some real-world education to take what you're learning in the classroom and pick up those skills that are so important for whatever you're going to do. And I would say I would highly recommend getting involved in a collegiate EMS organization to anyone. I think it's, you know, something to maybe even consider looking at a school if it's something you're involved with. But I don't think you can go wrong at all with getting involved with EMS, whatever you'd like to do in life.
I'll second that. As a member of a largely volunteer service area, that there's always opportunities to get involved with the emergency medical services or first response units in your communities on some level. And I think colleges provide that opportunity just as well as any other community does. I want to take a few moments here and thank everybody for joining on the call, and remind everyone that you can find out more about Collegiate EMS and perhaps help start a Collegiate EMS service at a college in your community. Go to www.nccemsf.org. That stands for National Collegiate EMS Foundation. And you can find some information there. Contact George or Scott or anybody else involved with the organization to find out about how to get your area's collegiate EMS service started. And I'm really glad to have everybody on the call. And heck, you know, if you guys are going to have your conference in our region next year, it's going to be close enough by. Maybe I can come down and help out in some way. I'd love to be able to participate in that and maybe MC something for you if you'd like. So please keep me in mind if you are looking for somebody.
We'd love to have you.
Great. I'm going to wrap things up and just remind everybody that this show is being recorded live, but it will be edited a little bit to clean up some of the pauses and awkward moments when I am moving on from topic to topic. But it'll be showing up in next Sunday's regular Medicast feed for the general community out there. But those of you who joined us live in the chat room and on the phone lines, I want to thank everyone for getting in here and sharing all of the comments, because this is what makes this one of the most fun activities for me every single month. You can head over to medicast.com and check out all of the shows in the Medicast community. Also, if you're looking for other great medical content, you can't go wrong. Go to promednetwork.com. The ProMed Network is a great resource with various topics dealing with medical sciences, including topics of psychology, other emergency medical services and disaster response programs, and of course, my other main program, The Nursing Show. You can find all of that over at promednetwork.com. That's it for me. I will wrap up as I always do and remind all of you, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Don't forget, folks, scene safety, BSI.